Okay, we're up and running, and welcome everyone to our Mass and Strength coaching call. Myself and Mike Westerdahl are here on the line, and we're going to be focusing tonight on sharing some insider tips and tricks to help you get the most out of our Mass and Strength combo programs. If you're listening to this now, you are getting access because you ordered our Blaster Bench and Critical Bench combo programs that we've put off a special for our 10th year anniversary of these programs, and like I say, they're totally updated, totally revised, and we're really excited about it. So how about we just start off, because obviously some people here are probably followers of, you know, LeeHayward.com and myself, and others are probably followers of Mike and Critical Bench. So why don't we just quickly introduce ourselves, Mike? So if you want to give our listeners a little overview and an intro to who you are and what your experience with regards to training and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. Hey, everybody. I'm Mike Westerdahl here. I'm the founder of CriticalBench.com, and I've created the Critical Bench program. Just a quick background on how that program came about and how I got involved with training. My family moved to Connecticut when I was in high school, about 16 years old, and I was trying to play football in high school with no football background. I was a really, really skinny kid. I think freshman year of high school, I was like 115 pounds. It was really sad. And I found the YMCA. Having moved to a new area, I didn't know anybody at the school, didn't have a lot of friends. So I just started lifting weights every day at the YMCA, overtraining my ass off, doing full body routines every single day. And you know, when you first start lifting, you just grow no matter what. Like anything you do kind of works, even if it's not the smartest. But I was just reading the muscle magazines and just getting things all wrong. But, you know, there's pictures of me if you've seen of me in high school when I was like 155 pounds. But I did put on some weight over high school, got a little stronger and stuff. Wound up walking on to a Division I AA football program at Central Connecticut State, and that's where I met some guys that really had some knowledge when it came to getting stronger, which I learned has a lot to do with getting bigger. So I'd always been training with like 8 to 12 reps. You know, typically when I was in high school, I learned to lower my reps and change my form and start more of a power building type routine. And that's when my bench just skyrocketed. I mean, in high school, by my senior year, my best was 275 pounds. And by the end of college, I was well over 400 pounds. So I made a huge jump during my college years. And that's how the Critical Bench program started. I just logged all the workouts that I was doing in college when I got so strong, and the guys that were doing that with me, and kind of wrote all that down, had the whole program written, and people were always coming up to me asking, how can I increase my bench? It was just like the most common question. I had one of the biggest bench presses on the football team, so everybody wanted to know how to do it. Then at the same time, we had a school project to start a website, and I didn't know what to make the website about. I was like, well, everybody's asking me about this bench press thing, and I put that up. So that's how the website started. It's been 10 years now, maybe actually 11. That was like 1999. So pretty psyched. You know, right away when I got on the internet, I saw Lee and his website and Blast Your Bench, and I was like, all right, cool. And, you know, we were kind of like didn't know each other back then, and we're always like, you know, I was following him. He's probably keeping track of me and stuff. And then later on, we became friends and kind of joined forces instead of being like competitors against each other. But yeah, after college, I just went on and I, you know, I did the office marketing, like business jobs for a while, but I just couldn't take it. I was doing personal training. I went to Europe for a little while and played some football, started writing for some of the magazines, and basically realized I could help so many more people just by focusing on the website and publishing information and writing programs to help a lot of people at once. As a trainer, I mean, you've got 40 hours in a week, you know, more, 50, 60 hours maybe. I mean, how much can you actually train people in a week? And there's only so many people you can help. So the internet just gave me so much more freedom to help more people and just create more freedom in my life too. And later on, wound up moving to Florida, Bay, Tampa Bay, Florida. Now I enjoy competing in powerlifting. I joined a barbell club here called Tampa Barbell, so I'm learning from like really high-end competitive powerlifters, and that took my lifting to a whole nother level. I'm always looking to learn new stuff, and that's why, you know, I'm really psyched to team up with Lee here and learn some of his techniques and stuff he's been teaching too. I'm not too proud to be a forever student, always learning new stuff. So that's kind of my background and where I'm coming from.
It's awesome, and you know, I can see a lot of similarities in how we got started by just hearing, you know, about your story and stuff, because very similar situation. I actually started working out again in school, you know, in high school and in college. We had, you know, I did a computer studies course in college. Now, I mean, of course, computer studies a decade ago is nothing like computers today, but nonetheless, one of our school projects was to start a website, and I actually started a bodybuilding website as a school project, just the same as you did. So, I mean, that's how I got my start online. So it's pretty ironic, you know, how we both got started the same way. But again, that's how I started. I mean, it was just a simple site. I think I put it up on one of these, like, GeoCity sites. Do you remember those, Mike, back in the day?
Yeah,
GeoCity free
that.
Website? Yeah.
Yep.
So that's what I started with, yeah. You know, and like I say, as they say, the rest is history, right? But with my training, I focused primarily on, you know, first I just wanted to work out. I mean, I had no set plan or anything. But once I got a bit more serious into it, I focused on bodybuilding primarily, and I also did some powerlifting as well. And I actually competed in a meet several years ago now. But it was 2004. I did a powerlifting meet, a local meet, and at that time I benched 445. So that was my personal best when it comes to powerlifting right there in the bench press. And my main avenue now is more along the lines of bodybuilding. That's where I really like to focus my efforts, and that's where I've been competing mostly. In fact, I did my most recent show this past spring, which was my 12th bodybuilding show, usually doing one show a year as a bodybuilding competitor. So, been at it quite a while, started competing in 95. And how I got involved with the, you know, studying and kind of teaching people, very similar to yourself, Mike. I started off following a lot of the stuff that I was reading on, you know, books and magazines and things like that, and these little cheesy York workout programs that came with, you know, home gym sets and stuff like that. And, I mean, at first, yes, you do see some progress, but you quickly plateau. And that's what I was really looking for. You know, what can I do to really take this to the next level? And I started hanging around some local bodybuilders and powerlifters. And I find that a lot of, you know, smaller areas, bodybuilders and powerlifters, they tend to train in the same gyms, you know, because they're not a – Newfoundland, where I'm from, is not a big spot. So a lot of trainers, they tend to focus in the same area. And so it's a very, very niche down. I mean, a lot of bodybuilders will train in powerlifting. A lot of powerlifters will kind of do some bodybuilding. You know, a lot of them go to the same shows and things like that. So I really got to know a lot of the local bodybuilders and lifters. And just by picking their brains and getting training advice and working out in the gym, I mean, that's where – over the years, I came up with the program, you know, Blast Your Bench, and took it from there. So, you know, a kind of similar story to how you got started as well.
Cool.
All right. Okay, so like I say, we've kind of introduced ourselves for everyone here on the call. And now, Mike, with the Critical Bench program, I mean, I actually picked up a copy of this when you first started. You probably remember you used to send it a little spiral-bound copies that you, I think, printed off from your computer or something like that. But back 10 years ago, I bought a copy, I think, and I still have it here. I do. It was handwritten numbers on it for the customized workout logs and everything else.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you remember sending me that now over 10 years ago, but I still have my copy of Critical Bench here. But, you know, give us an overview of how that program works, because I know you've added a lot to it. You know, with your revised version, you've got a deload phase put into it and all this stuff. And actually, some of the questions that came in were specific with regards to how to go about the different phases of Critical Bench. So how about just giving us a quick overview of, you know, how the whole program works?
Yeah, I mean, one of the newest things to the program is just going over the techniques. I mean, that's something that I've really learned a lot about in the last couple of years as I've started competing and training with some of the top-level powerlifters, and there's a ton of information about technique. But no matter what program you do, the technique is one of the most important things you need to get down, and that's why we've got that bench press fundamentals video just showing you how to do that, which is so important. Before you even start using heavy weights, just getting the form down right, because that alone immediately can give you so many more pounds on your lift. But as far as the program set up and the way I structured it, this is really a hybrid program. It's a mix between powerlifting and bodybuilding. Now, I think that in order to grow muscle mass and to get bigger, you need to get stronger. When you get stronger, your muscles adapt and they change and they grow in order to handle this heavier weight that you're lifting. You know, there's different schools of thought. Some people think the volume training and the higher reps do it, and that may be true for some people. But from what I experienced, this is when I packed on the most muscle in my life and got the strongest in my life, happened at the same time, and that's when I started using compound exercises, and it's when I started lowering my reps. Now, I didn't go full-blown just low reps on every single exercise, and that's what we do in the critical bench program. We take the compound exercises and we do those for lower reps for multiple sets, but then we add in assistance exercises or auxiliary supplemental exercises, and with those you do a little bit higher rep range. You know, if some people respond more to higher reps and that actually grows more muscle, that's why those are in there. Another thing, a lot of people just focus so much on just bench pressing, but there's so many other muscles that are involved in the lift that you need to hit those other muscle groups. Like, just back is just as important as your chest. You need the strong back to stabilize the weight coming down. Like, you know, doing rows and lat pull downs, those are so important. But, you know, as a kid and as a teenager, you just go and bench and do biceps every other day and you think your bench is going to keep going up. But these other muscle groups are so important. So it's a very strategic split. I mean, there's some muscles that you do use a lot more in the bench. I mean, primarily everybody knows you've got your shoulders, your chest, and your triceps involved. So I like to hit all those muscle groups really hard, but keep them spaced out. So you're never training when a muscle group should be sore. You're never hitting that again. I try to keep on, because it's a bench specialization program, I want you completely fresh on bench day. Everything is healed up and ready to go. That's your main day. But it's a full body program. So you get stronger, all your lifts should go up, and it's a true power building program where you've got powerlifting reps and compound exercises built in with some bodybuilding type exercises with some of the higher reps. And
awesome.
It's a 10-week program, and it gives you the weights to do as you go through. Everybody in here has, you know, on this call has already purchased it, so they know how it's set up, but
right.
It takes you through to the end, where you get like a max out schedule that you follow to hopefully go up 50 pounds. Some people, beginners, can go up more. If you're super advanced, you know, some people get less. It varies from person to person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things, and I guess we're kind of preaching to the choir here, but we've gotten this, I know I have, and you have as well, like our claim to fame is, you know, 50 pounds on a bench, and it's a nice round number, and like I say, a lot of people do reach it, but very often, you know, it's an average. Like you say, beginners can, you know, very often overshoot that and achieve more, whereas people who've been training for several years or people who are a bit older or whatnot, you know, will probably gain less. But nonetheless, by going through these programs, and I know for myself, everybody who's went through the program has come out bigger and stronger on the other end. You know, there's nobody who can go through the program, follow it to the letter, and not make gains. I haven't seen that happen.
I think for my program, it's ideal for getting people up to a 300-pound bench. I mean, people that have gotten to around into the 200s and they're trying to get to 300, I think it's absolutely perfect for that. And I think anybody that gets it and just learns the techniques that are involved with this lift should get another 25 pounds alone just from practicing those techniques.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Now, with the whole training thing, obviously the people who are following the programs now, they know that they're two totally different programs, Blaster Bench and Critical Bench, and I'll just quickly give an overview here of how these programs work. Well, with Blaster Bench, my claim to fame is, you know, upwards of 50 pounds in 3 weeks, but there's a little bit of gray area for that because you actually have to prime yourself before you're ready for that three-week growth phase. It starts off with a two-week preparation phase. And during that phase, we totally eliminate flat bench from the workout and focus on bringing up those assistant and stabilizer muscles. And very often, a lot of guys, like you mentioned, they're in the gym day after day, usually like bench press and arms. You know, they'll go over to the bench, max out, get their buddy to deadlift the bar off their chest, and then they'll spend the next hour doing preacher curls, you know, hit the showers, and then come back and do the same thing the next day. And how often do you see that, you know, chest and arms day after day? And usually that ends up, you know, going nowhere fast. So the first phase that I like to do in the Blaster Bench program is to totally give your body a break from bench pressing, and we focus on some other core exercises to build up the same muscle groups, but just working them from different angles. Then we get into the actual bench press specialization phase, which is a 3-week course. And I use a variety of set and rep patterns within that 3-week course. So, I mean, there's heavy pyramid days, there's high volume repetition days, low volume days where you're doing multiple sets of low reps. I mean, it's all strategically built into a 3-week program. And then after that, I go into a squat specialization phase, again, using kind of similar training strategies that we did for the bench press specialization phase, but apply it to the squat. So that's a 3-week blast your squat routine. And then I go into a 12-week general mass and power building routine, which will really help solidify these rapid gains that you make during the specialization phases. So it is a complete program covering all strength bases as well. So again, both programs, there's different methods to them, but they complement one another. We were actually talking to a person earlier before we started the recording here for this call, who's actually started with the Blaster Bench program, upped his bench, I think, somewhere in the vicinity of 20 pounds in a matter of a few weeks, now moving on to the critical bench program and hoping to take his bench to a higher level. And he's seeing, another growth spurt by just starting the other bench press specialization phase. So, both programs really complement one another.
That's kind of why we put them together. I mean, you can do one of these programs and then do a deload and then move on to the next and then go back and forth. It just helps mix things up and shock your muscles and your nervous system just with different training.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's one. I've heard a great quote, and it's one that I often follow in my training, is like there's no best workout program. If there is a best workout program, it's the one you're currently not doing. because it's just providing unique muscle stimulation to help get your body growing again. Because if you keep doing the same thing over and over, I mean, your body's smart and it's going to adapt. And you need to provide some unique stimulation just to keep things fresh, keep yourself on the edge so that you're continually making progress.
Yeah, and that's why the deload is so important too.
Yeah, we're actually going to get into that. We have a lot of questions that people have sent in. So that's what I'd like to jump into right now. And seeing we're talking about the deload, we mentioned that a couple times. Where was it? Somebody had actually put it in. Can't find it here now. I'm scrolling through my questions here.
I'll look for it too.
Do you have it there? I believe I emailed it to you.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Okay, here we are. Just a second now. Okay, Mike, I'm almost at the end of the critical bench program and wanted to know, should I take a week off at the end and then deload, or do I go right into the deload after week 10? So like I say, seeing this is your program, obviously you're the best guy to ask for this. How does this whole deload phase work with the critical bench program?
Well, with this question, I mean, you got to know your body and see how you feel. Different programs, how much weight you're lifting, depending on your stress levels, what's going on in your life, I don't know. So you got to feel this out. If you feel beat up, your joints are hurting, you just feel overtrained, and you feel like you want to take a week off, it feels like you're asking me, Mike, is it okay to take a week off first? If you feel like it is, then sure, definitely take a week off. I mean, you just trained hard for 11 weeks. You can take a week off, then start the deload program. That's fine. If you're still feeling fired up and you want to get right back into the gym and you're feeling antsy and you want to start another power program, don't start it right away. Do the deload program that's scheduled and then get back into one of these heavier programs. So, yeah, see how you feel. If you feel like you need the week off, take the week off. If you're ready to jump right back into this, don't jump right back in. Start the deload immediately and then start the startup again. What do you think, Lee?
That's a great answer in a way, because I find that with my own training, you can't purposely plan, when you need to take a break. You got to listen to your body because everybody's different. We all go through different situations with, life from work and school or stress or things like that. And you can't really plan when you need to take a week off. I mean, you might be going several weeks in a row making great progress and then all of a sudden just feel like you hit the wall and you need to take a break. Other times, I mean, you may be able to go for several months, training hardcore and still feel strong. So again, you really need to listen and just follow your body.
I mean, I think that comes with more experience too. So I think if you're a beginner or you're just starting out, that might be a time when it's okay to schedule it in, just because sometimes if you don't have that scheduled break in, your body schedules it for you, and that's what you don't want. That's what you want to avoid. So, you know, as you get more experience and you know your body and you know how you feel, you'll know when it's time. But if you don't know and you don't got that feeling yet, you know, it might be a good idea to take the few weeks after, you know, every, 10 to 12 weeks might be definitely time.
Yeah, that's a general guideline that a lot of people will go by. You know, every 12 weeks of herd training, then back off, take a week off, and then start the process again.
Yeah, and I mean, built into my program, week 5 is a much lighter week halfway through. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you take competitive powerlifters, some of them deload every third week or fourth week, but they don't they don't completely skip lifting. They just do higher rep things or more explosive training. So,
yeah. All right, let's see what else we got there. And all right, here's another question. I'm just going back to our main question list here. And this one's from Mass, and he's saying that he's an amateur bodybuilder, and he's 20 years old, and was wondering if taking a year off and training like a powerlifter would be beneficial for returning to the bodybuilding scene later. And I have to totally agree with this. In fact, I think all bodybuilders would benefit from doing powerlifting training for at least some time. I mean, you could do, say, like your off-season bodybuilding could be your quote-unquote in-season powerlifting. I think the foundational muscle that you build through powerlifting is going to carry over and help you with your bodybuilding. And one thing that you'll notice is some of the most successful bodybuilders, and I'm talking about like the top pros, were at one time competitive powerlifters. Ronnie Coleman was a competitive powerlifter. Branch Warren was a competitive powerlifter. Johnny Jackson, he still is a competitive powerlifter. I mean, there's so many big, muscular guys, and some of the guys who are dominating the pro stages who built their foundation through powerlifting. So I definitely think that it can certainly help a bodybuilder. I mean, would
even
you
back
with that,
in, even back in the, yeah, even back in the day, like Michael Colombo and stuff, he used to do those feats of strength, different contests, picking up cars and doing things, and it just builds a good foundation of muscle mass, and then later you can sculpt that or lose more body fat and things, but it definitely does not hurt. I think it's a great idea to just build some size and some solid foundation.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one thing, when you think back to the old-time bodybuilders, I mean, old-time, you know, back in the Muscle Beach and the pumping iron days and stuff, I mean, there wasn't a distinction between powerlifting and bodybuilding. It was just, these are the guys that work out, pretty much. I mean, Arnold did powerlifting. Like you said, Franco Colombo did powerlifting. It was just, that's the way they trained. I mean, it was hard and heavy, and they also, of course, did bodybuilding as well. But it wasn't a big distinction like it is today, you know, the bodybuilders and the powerlifters. It was basically just the guys that worked out.
Right. I say just combine them both and just do powerbuilding.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. All right, but nonetheless, is a great question to cover there. Okay, and what else? And there's another question here, Mike. Okay.
Yeah, we can move on. That's the next one. It says I'm finishing Mike's 10-week program 10 days before a competition. I'm in week 7 now. What's the best way to maintain those 10 days before the competition to hold the gains I've made and be at top form? Thanks, Ted. Now, here's the thing. He's doing it exactly right. Before you're going to a competition, taking 1 week to up to 10 days completely off from lifting even is fine. That's actually what you want to do. You want to go into the competition. You want to have your nervous system refreshed. You want all your muscles fully recuperated and ready. You're not going to get any stronger that 1 week before the competition. If you're still lifting heavy the week before, all that's probably going to do is hurt you when you are maxing out. So taking a full week off before a competition is perfectly fine. So to maintain your strength, you don't need to do anything to maintain that strength the week before. You're not going to lose anything. What you wouldn't want to do, or what I prefer to do, but this is just purely personal preference, I like to just get some blood moving around. So let's say the competition is on a Saturday. My last workout of the week might be Tuesday. And Tuesday I might do a full body routine doing like 15 reps per body part just to get blood moving around. You know, just to break up any soreness and just get the blood moving and feeling good. And that's really just, some guys can't sit still, and you kind of get all jittery, taking a whole week off, and you want to get those last few training sessions in, but they're not going to do anything. You've already built the strength you're going to have. Just try to relax and rest and get mentally prepared for the meet. And if you have to go to the gym, go ahead and just do some really light stuff just to get the blood flushing, moving around.
Cool. That makes a lot of sense. And I know when I competed in powerlifting several years back, I actually followed something very similar. The way I did it was my last workout was the week before the competition, and that was a light workout. So I worked up to my opener that I was going to do at the competition, but I didn't push myself hard. I guess it was kind of just a mental thing. I wanted to make sure that I could nail the opener with good form and everything else, and make sure I could touch the bar and stuff like that without having too much trouble. But how do you think about something like that? You know, if somebody wanted to do a light workout, say 1 week prior to a meet.
I usually save the opener for the week before that, even. So not the week of the meet. So what's the normal bench press day? Let's say your normal bench press day is Tuesday. And the meet's on Saturday. That Tuesday before the meet, I really wouldn't go heavy at all. You just go in and make sure you have your form down. You might do some speed reps, just get the blood moving. That's just me. I've seen guys do openers the week, that same week. But what I do is the week before that Tuesday, that's when I hit my opener. And, it's actually 2 weeks before the meet almost.
Okay. Yeah.
And the week before the meet, I just kind of get the blood flushed and moving around. But it's totally something you got to try out and see how you feel about it, because I've seen guys doing it both ways.
Yeah, for sure. But again, the main thing is, like I say, the kid here is doing the program right. He timed it out in such a way that he's going to be finished, 10 days before his meet. So he should be at top form just by resting up those last 10 days.
Yeah, rest up and just get a couple like light workouts in. That's it. That's all you need.
And, okay, so
look,
we pretty much nailed it there. But with the timing of the critical bench program, like if somebody is using this for powerlifting, I mean, would you literally use this, the 10 weeks before the meet and just do a countdown from there?
Yeah, I mean, there's 10 weeks of actual training, and then week 11 in the program is maxing out. So you can go through and do your whole 10 weeks and then take take a full week off before, or even a week and a half before the meet. Mm-hmm. It just depends the date of the meet and, which days you're benching. But try to get a full 7 days off of no heavy workouts before your meet.
All right. Cool. All right. Good stuff. Just moving along to our questions there. The next one, this is one that I get asked a lot, and then maybe you do too. It's... This is Lee. Quick question. First, I love your program and making huge gains, but my question is there an advantage or disadvantage to doing bench presses off the Smith machine? And this is from Jack. I think everybody has their own opinions about Smith machines, and I have to admit there are a couple exercises where I actually think that it's okay, but when it comes to your compound exercises, your benches, your squats, your deadlifts, your shoulder presses, and all these, big barbell exercises, I don't think the Smith machine is even a substitution for those exercises. How do you feel about it, Mike?
Yeah, how I feel about the Smith machine is if you have access to the free weights and you have access to a spotter, always take the free weights. And the reason is the Smith machine, it's on that guided path for you. You're not able to use all your stabilizer muscles. What you can do on a Smith machine is not going to transfer over to the bench. So if your goal is to be getting stronger and getting better at the bench or whatever exercise you're doing, it's not the same thing on the Smith machine. The only time I would say to do it is if you absolutely do not have a spotter. And I mean, I'm not saying you don't feel like asking somebody or something like that. If there's somebody at the gym, ask them for a spot and use the free weight. And don't use it for the main exercises. There's some stuff you can do over there for your assistant stuff. If you want to do like some upright rows or some shrugs using it, that's fine. Yep. But really, try to use it as a last resort. Free weight is always better.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And like you mentioned, I find that it's very uncomfortable, actually, especially for exercises like bench presses where the bar doesn't travel in a vertical straight up and down line. And same with squats. The bar doesn't travel in a vertical straight up and down line, or deadlifts, or any of these. I mean, if you watch somebody from the side, the bar is going to move, you know, in an arc-like pattern. So I find that it really can throw off your form, place extra stress on your joints, especially like the shoulders and stuff like that. And I just really hate the Smith machine when it comes to bench pressing.
Yeah, that's a good point. It can definitely throw off your technique.
Yeah. All right. But again, at the same time, I do know some beginners who probably like have one of these Smith machine home gyms, and you know, they start off with it. I mean, it's not terrible, but if you have access to the free weights, like you said, by all means, move to those.
Right, and for safety. I mean, if you don't have a spotter and you're trying to go heavy, I guess you have no choice.
All right, next question here. This is for you, Mike. It's, what's your opinion on training to failure for powerlifting? I noticed that a lot of powerlifters train heavy, but they don't necessarily rep out to failure like many bodybuilders do. And this is from Brian.
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, and I'd like to hear your input, too, on training to failure for bodybuilding. But when it comes to powerlifting, the guys, you're right, they do not train to failure. And the reason that I think that people don't train to failure is because when you train and you miss lifts, you're actually training yourself to miss lifts. And I don't know if this is all mental or if it's physiological also, but it seems hard to get past a sticking point. Picture a guy that's trying to get that 300-pound bench, right? And every time he comes into his workout and he tries that 300 pounds and he keeps missing it, I don't know what's going on, but you're training your head right there that you can't get 300 pounds because you keep missing it. It's bad for your confidence to keep missing it and going for something like that. I think you always want to keep your confidence high by going for lifts and numbers that you can make. You don't want to have spotters helping you with it. Now, that's just the mental standpoint. I'm not sure why. I've had some guys explain it to me before, but it can also train you physiologically to mess up the lift too. So in powerlifting, we don't train to failure. As soon as it gets stuck and it's not making any progress, the spotters just take it and rack it for you. I mean, they don't make you sit there and struggle and hold it the whole time. I mean, if you're not going to get it, you're not getting it. They just take it. And you know what? Everybody has an off day. That's something people get really upset about. They're like, I just didn't do as well today as I should have. And, you know, there's so many reasons why, and we could make up all these reasons or guess what the reasons are. But the matter of the fact is it happens to everybody. Everybody has a bad day. Maybe you were out working in the sun, or you're stressed out. You had a fight with your girlfriend, or something's going on. You ate really bad that day. It's so hard to tell what the reason is. Just don't let one of these, if you feel it, you're having a bad day, it's okay. It happens to everybody. That might be a day just to go a little bit lighter than, you know, what you're supposed to be doing. It's fine. Go a little bit lighter for that workout and just get all your reps in. That's much better than feeling like crap and still trying to do weights you don't think you can get, and then you miss them, and then it just kind of compounds.
Yeah, I agree totally with that, man. And it is a huge mental block. You know, so you always want to be in the gym setting little, you know, personal records, you know, making these little itsy-bitsy jumps in weight. Like you say, you know, shoot for that 5-pound gain and make those little 5-pound jumps on a regular basis, you know, just to keep yourself feeling like you're succeeding in the gym, rather than, you know, trying something that's too heavy and totally breaking down mentally in that. But another thing, I agree with this totally as well, and even in bodybuilding training, I mean, in my own workouts, I rarely will rep out to failure. Almost always, I will rack the weight on my own. I don't like to be, like you say, struggling there. And how often do you see this? I mean, guys like doing bench press, for example, and they'll be stuck, and then they'll want the spotter, you know, to help them do a forced rep, and then they'll say, okay, like two more, and then they'll do like, you know, forced reps after forced reps, and it's just breaking down your body. I think you're tearing your muscles down faster than they recover, and rather than stimulating more growth like a lot of people think they're doing, I think it's just hampering your recovery. So I rather, you know, push yourself hard, yes, but when you know that, okay, I can't get another good rep on my own, I usually just rack the weight. Very rarely do I have to have, you know, spotters pulling the weight off me. And, of course, I just have them there for safety reasons. But I don't rep out to failure and then do multiple forced reps and all that stuff like you see a lot of typically newer guys doing in the gym. The newer guys who want to pretend they're hardcore typically do that. But I found from personal experience I can make better gains and stay relatively injury-free by just stopping short of failure. So.
Yeah, good point.
All right, so let's move along, see what else. Okay, this one is from Josh, and he's saying, Lee, can you briefly explain the hand variation you do with push-ups? I notice that you place your hands in a very certain way. It's like you bend them. All right, Josh must have been watching some of my videos or whatever where I'm doing push-ups and stuff. And I do like to mix up my grips and my hand positions with push-ups, but I don't really have anything particularly special. I guess the way my hands bend when I do a push-up is just the way it is. But typically when I do push-ups in my workout, I like to start off with a narrower grip, and as I fatigue with each set, I will move my grip out wider just to work, you know, the different areas of the chest, shoulders, and triceps. Usually the narrower your hand spacing, the more you're going to emphasize your triceps and your inner chest, and then gradually as you work your hands out wider, it's going to be more of the chest and even more the outer chest as you get really wide. But I don't really pay particular attention to my hand spacing. But one little tip that I like to throw out there, if you have access to push-up bars or even these hex-shaped dumbbells where you can actually lay them on the floor and they're not going to roll on you, doing your push-ups holding onto a handle will actually allow you to squeeze out a few extra reps that you normally wouldn't be able to do if your hands were flat on the floor. I don't know what it is, but just the angle of having your hands grabbing a bar and the position of the wrists, you're in a stronger position than if your hands are totally open and flat as they are if you're just doing push-ups flat on the floor.
Cool. Probably just like when you bench and you squeeze the bar harder, you're able to get more reps. Now you got something to squeeze, you activate more muscle and more motor units to help you out.
Yeah, you're bringing your forearms in, and again, there's more muscle activation happening when you're actually holding on to a handle versus just hands flat on the floor.
Yeah, I thought you said I thought you said shake weight there for a second. Do you know what that is?
Shake. Yes, I know what the shake weight is. If you don't know what the shake weight is, go to Google or YouTube actually, and just do a search for shake weight.
Yeah, but type in spoof afterwards and find some funny.
Yes, shake weight spoof. Oh my God, it's that just shows you what crap people are selling on infomercials and late night TV and everything else. Yeah, the shake weight.
I got a question from Jeremy. Were you done, or did you have more to say on that, Lee?
No, man, move on. Yeah, sure.
All right, cool. We got Jeremy sent a question. I was wondering if the theory of progressive overloads should be applied to all exercises, not just the main ones. And my answer to that, we kind of touched on this briefly in the previous question. Yes, I think you want to be trying to improve on every exercise. It's not like you just focus on one and ignore everything else, because they're all related and connected to each other. So try to improve on everything you're doing. And for people that aren't familiar with progressive overload, it's trying to improve, and that there's different ways to improve. You can try to get more reps with the same weight. You can go up in small incremental weights with dumbbells or something, or just add a couple 2.5-pound plates, just doing that, improving a little bit, or even trying to get more sets or reps in a certain amount of time are all ways that you can show some kind of improvement. So I say definitely try to improve on every exercise.
Yeah, for sure. One thing you'll find with the different exercises, I mean, obviously the big basic compound barbell lifts, it's going to be easy to make those small 5-pound jumps from, you know, on a regular basis. When you're getting into some smaller, you know, isolation type exercises, you know, it's going to be harder to make those jumps, obviously, because, you know, for example, deadlifting 300 pounds and adding 5 pounds to the bar, there's a huge difference between doing that and adding 5 pounds to, say, like a 30-pound dumbbell curl. I mean, percentage-wise, it's huge. So obviously, there's going to be smaller increments in smaller exercises, but nonetheless, you know, progressive overload should definitely be applied to all movements.
I do think
go ahead.
Well, I think eventually, all right, your turn. Go ahead.
No, no, man, you're started.
I forgot what I was going to say now.
All right, I'll go on and just throw out my 2 cents worth, and then I'll shut up. What I was saying is, with these smaller exercises, especially like dumbbell moves, I usually work within a rep range rather than trying to, you know, move up to the next heaviest set of dumbbells. I'll probably like have a rep range, so like say 8 to 12 reps. And when I can get all my sets with 12 reps with good form, I'll move up to the next heaviest set of dumbbells and then drop my reps back to 8. And then, you know, build them up. So the next workout, try to get 9 reps, 10 reps, 11, 12. And then when I hit the top of the rep range, move up to the next heaviest set of dumbbells and drop the reps down again. And I find that that allows you to make progressive overload without, you know, increasing the weights each workout.
Yeah, that, I do the same thing. That's a good idea. I mean, my whole program is based on progressive overloads, and I've said this before. You can't just start with one max chart, go through the whole thing, get a new max, and just start right again, even though it's all progressive overload. I mean, eventually something's going to happen. Your body's going to adapt. It's going to get used to it, and you're going to hit some kind of a plateau. You cannot do progressive overload forever without changing up your routine. So that's a perfect time to take a break, change your training, and try a different kind of program. So if you started doing blast your bench, that could be a time you're starting to struggle at a certain point. That's when you try a different program. You try stack that with the critical bench program next. So that's another advantage of having access to both of these programs instead of always doing the same program over and over. When you do the same thing over and over, of overloads, eventually it's going to get harder and harder to make those increases.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you need to change things as your body adapts, for sure. Seeing we're on the topic of that, how often, nobody submitted this question, but it's one that I've received in the past, and I want to get your opinion on it. How often should somebody follow the critical bench program?
Let's see, how many weeks? It's 12 weeks. I like doing it 2 times a year for me. That's how many times I like to follow it. But you could do it more, up to 3, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because I've gotten that question with people asking me, you know, with regards to blast your bench, how often can they follow it? And I usually recommend that people go through the entire training cycle as it's outlined. One thing that I find a mistake that a lot of guys make is they just want the program for the bench press phase. So they'll usually do the 2-week preparation phase, then they'll do the 3-week bench press specialization phase, and then they're like, oh, squats are the next, you know, it's a squat specialization phase, and people are like, oh, I hate squats. So they usually drop the program and then move on. And so they just do it for the bench. But if you can, you know, muster up the willpower and everything else to do the entire program, which is what I definitely recommend. Go through the 2-week prep phase, 3-week bench specialization phase, 3-week squat specialization phase, and then the 12-week general training phase. And you could literally repeat that cycle over and over again. I mean, until your body, you know, is really adapting to it, like you mentioned before, until your body's starting to say, okay, I need to do something different. But there's enough training variety and different kinds of muscle stimulation built into that long-term cycle. Somebody could follow it over and over again. Like, say,
how many total weeks is your? How many total weeks is yours from start to finish?
So it's 20 weeks if somebody were to do it the entire training system as is. You know, it's 8 weeks for the 2-week prep, 3-week bench, 3-week squat, and then 12 weeks. General total body mass and power, so it would be a 20-week program from start to finish. But
yeah.
Unfortunately, most guys don't do it. They get to the bench, you know, set a new personal record in the bench, and then they're kind of happy with that, I guess, and just move on.
I mean, if you go through that twice, you're talking like 10 months almost.
Yeah, that's right.
Same thing doing the critical bench program 3 times with some deloads in between.
Right.
You do it. As many times as you can, or until you want to change it up, or until you feel like you're not making the same gains, save it and go back to it later.
Yeah, and that's one thing. I like to use these specialization programs. I mean, not as the foundation, like you're going to do this all the time, but like say once or twice a year to go back to it, I find that you can really, you know, jumpstart your gains again and really get the most out of it rather than trying to stick with it as your exclusive training program. That's just my 2 cents worth. That's what I find with, works well with the blaster bench program.
Cool.
All right. So do you want to take some more of the questions that your people?
Yeah, I got one from Peter, actually. We were chatting with him before the line started recording. He's got a deadlift question. Let's see. Well, he's glad they're part of the workout, so that's good. Deadlifts are a great exercise. He wants to know, do you wear a belt? It seems it would catch when you lift up. And what do you do to adjust for that? Yeah, it's pretty important to wear a belt when you are deadlifting, especially as you go heavier with the lower reps. It helps support your stomach. Not only is it safety for your back, but it's also something for your stomach to push against when you're holding your air as you do the lift. So it's important to wear it. And you're right, it can feel like the bar gets caught on it then. So I actually pull the belt up a little higher. It's not sitting as low as I usually hold it. I mean, same thing for squats. It's not like where you'd picture right above your hips. I mean, I pull it up some, so it's kind of like halfway up my stomach almost. But try doing that. They also have, like, skinnier belts you can try as well that don't catch as much. What you don't want to do is get them caught on your ribs and things. So just find, like, a comfortable spot a little higher might do the trick.
And on the topic of belts, what kind of belt do you recommend? Because there's a lot of different belts available.
Personally, I like the ones from ProWristStraps.com, APT Pro Gear. And
okay.
It doesn't matter if it's got a lever, if it's got one of the belt buckles in it. But I'm not sure what the material is, but they have powerlifting belts there that are really good. I don't like the really skinny, like little tiny leather ones, you know, with the padding on them that you buy at Sports Authority.
Yes.
That's not the kind.
That's what I was
like.
Getting at.
I don't know what those are really going to do.
So you like the thick powerlifting belts that are the same width all the way around the belt? You know,
yeah,
it's not
same width all the way around, and you don't walk around wearing it everywhere. You don't do it like your cable crossovers. You don't need to have your belt on. Here's my – I get asked this question all the time, so just real quick. I didn't get this question today, but when to wear belts. Wear it when you're doing heavier weight. For me, I'd say if you're doing 3 reps or less, put the belt on for sure. But you definitely don't shelter your back and your abs. If you're all the time, everything you're doing, you're actually protecting those muscles from getting stronger and developing your core. So don't use it until you're starting to do some heavier weight.
Yeah, for sure. Don't be go around the gym with your workout gloves and your belt on during your entire workout.
Well, I used to do that in high school. So
doing
that, don't feel bad. Now you know.
Fashion statement. Yeah, the fingerless workout glove.
And my first weight belt was one of those black and white zebra ones, like Vallejo Velcro. So I'd walk around with that. I can't remember if I had the gloves on or not. So like 110 pounds walking around with the zebra belt everywhere I went.
I remember those, the value. They're Velcro belts, weren't they? They weren't even leather.
Yeah. Yep. No.
Oh, God.
I don't know. Someone, football coach or somebody told you got to wear a belt, and you just, like, wear it all the time.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, yeah, that's a good point to cover that, because I know a lot of people are confused when it comes to belts, and don't go to the store and, like, say, get those little cheesy workout belts that are really thick in the back and then really tiny in the front. One of the main benefits is not to support your back, is to have something to push your stomach against, which is going to draw tension throughout your entire core. I mean, you mentioned this before, Mike, when you're saying you want something, you know, you can push your stomach against and hold your air. And that's a big misconception. You see these cheesy belts at the department store. I mean, they're 6 or 8 inches across the back when you don't need all that padding there and all that, you know, leather, and then they're probably only like 2 inches in the front. You need something thick in the front, and I'm the same way. When I put on a belt, it's usually, you know, right up around, you know, the like if you blow your belly out, right around the belly button, probably a little above it, that's typically where your belly will expand the most, and that's usually where I end up putting the belt to, right where I can blow my air out and get the most tension.
Yeah. Well, I mean, while we're on the topic, same thing with straps, which helps you get a better grip, and when to put on wrist wraps, if anybody's got a question about that. I think we covered it in our programs, but if anyone else is listening, it's the same rule. You're only as strong as your weakest link, so if you're always using straps to help you lift more weight, now when the straps are gone, you've got a weak grip and weak hands, and you need those muscles for your lifting. So, again, only use these tools and these safety things as you get up in the heavier weight just to help you as it gets heavier. You don't need to do it when you're doing, like, 10 to 12 reps.
Right. And I guess that would apply, too, for wrist wraps and knee wraps and all sorts of assistant aids like that.
Yeah,
same idea. Right. Yeah, typically as you're working up through your sets, I mean, the way I like to do is, like for a belt, for example, I'll do my warm-ups without the belt, and then, you know, as you're getting heavier and the reps are getting lower, you know, put the belt on and work it from there. Plus, definitely all the warm-up sets are done without a belt or without any assistance aids, like wraps and stuff like that.
Yep.
All right, so actually, we were just talking about deadlifts there. There was another question came through with regards to deadlifting, and it's kind of a unique one, and this one's from Willie, and he's saying, I have a question about squatting and deadlifting. My squat is 325 pounds, and my deadlift is 475 pounds. I noticed that a lot of powerlifters squat more than they deadlift. Should I set a goal to get my squat higher than my deadlift? And do you think that everybody should work their way so that their squat is higher than their deadlift?
Yeah. Well, Willie, you notice that because it's true. Most people do squat more than they deadlift. I mean, if you look at the typical numbers, the results, powerlifting meets, you're going to see the highest number is going to be the squat. The second highest number is going to be the deadlift, followed by the bench. And that's just normal, and not everybody's like that. And I mean, yours is a little different here, and mine are weird too. Mine are like all exactly the same. It's really strange, but well, that's with gear. Raw, it's a little different. But yeah, your squat should definitely be, I would say, maybe 100 pounds higher than your deadlift, and then your bench could even be like 100 pounds underneath your deadlift. But I mean, it all varies. But just based on what I'm seeing for your numbers, it sounds like your squat is the lagging exercise here. So that's definitely something that I would work on. I think as you improve your squat, your other lifts will benefit from it as well.
Yeah. And one thing that we should point out, like with these numbers here, I'm assuming that, you know, Willie is a, you know, your typical gym member and not using powerlifting equipment. When you put on a squat suit, you'll get a lot more assistance out of that squat suit versus putting on a deadlift suit. I mean, the carryover from a squat suit is huge versus a deadlift suit. It kind of just adds support, but not really a whole lot of poundage. Do you find that when you're training as well?
No, that's true. I mean, even with gear for deadlifting, I mean, people don't get a lot of weight out of it. I think people might get like 50 pounds at the most, but the squat suit, I mean, you can get hundreds of pounds, and it's not something you just put on and you can all of a sudden do the weight. You have to, your nervous system has to get used to this. There's a lot of technique
Absolutely.
And skill involved. I mean, it takes a long time just being able to handle this weight. It really takes a lot of practice, and that's one of the main things. It's practicing more so. But if we're talking just no equipment and we're talking just raw, I mean, even getting them close to each other should be a goal. What do you think? Do you think you should be able to lift more than you squat, or do you think
I think
that varies?
It's going to vary, and I think it depends a lot on the person's body type. You know, I mean, typically someone with a thinner, you know, build, more of an ectomorph type of build, they tend to be really strong deadlifters, and then you have some of the shorter, stockier guys tend to be real strong, you know, squatters and benchers. So I think it has a lot to do with somebody's, you know, structure. And you like say, yeah, you should shoot for a squat and a deadlift that are pretty close to one another. I would say like within 100 pounds of each other would be a good goal. But I mean, if your natural tendency, you know, you have a deadlifter's physique, don't worry about it. I mean, you know, build your strong points by all means. But still, like this case here, there's 150 pounds between his squat and his deadlift, and these are at, you know, relatively low poundages. So yeah,
I mean, he's got some strength there in the deadlift, so I think you can get the squat up to 400 or so.
Yeah, for sure. But again, like I say, it's all, everybody's has their own unique body type, and some people are going to be, you know, stronger in certain lifts. So there's not like one, you know, one answer that, hey, everybody should squat more than they deadlift. No. I mean, even amongst the top powerlifters, you're not going to see that. All right.
So I got another good question from Peter. I kind of want to hear what Lee has to say about this one too. But he's got a goal of reaching 300 pounds in October for his 40th birthday. And after, he says, I'm going to get ripped. So it sounds like after he hits the 300-pound bench goal, he wants to really reduce his body fat. But He does not want to lose his bench press strength. What can he do to maintain bench press strength while at the same time trying to get ripped? And I've done a couple big interviews on this, and I mean, this is really open for debate. I mean, it's a really loaded question. It's probably could spend a couple hours talking about just this alone, but from my experience, there's a fine line between how much cardio you can do before it starts affecting your strength, and it's different for every person. And I've seen some people that do a ton of cardio and still keep their strength, and some people, if they just a little too much, it immediately affects their strength. So, Lee, do you have any suggestions how he could keep his bench press strength and lose some body fat at the same time?
Yeah, definitely, like I say, this is a like opening a can of worms. First off, I'm going to this is probably not the most positive thing, but I just know from experience, chances are if you want to get ripped, and I mean like truly ripped as in single-digit body fat with, you know, visible abdominal definition and everything else, chances are you're going to lose a little bit of strength in the process. I find every time I diet down for bodybuilding competition, as much as I try to maintain my strength and everything else, it's, you know, the leaner you get, it's just inevitable that you're going to lose a little bit of strength along the way. Now, of course, there are some genetic freaks out there who are, you know, super strong, you know, powerlifters and strongmen who have, you know, ripped abs year-round as well, but, you know, they're slim and few. I just find that typically you can start a diet plan and maintain or even gain strength in your diet as long as you're not too extreme. I mean, you're still keeping adequate protein in there. You're still keeping an adequate fat intake. And I usually make my biggest cut in my starchy carbohydrates, still keeping, you know, vegetables and healthy carbs like that, you know, fibrous carbs and green veggies in there. But typically I cut back on the heavy starches and, of course, sugars and sweets and crap that you shouldn't be eating anyway. And I find that that allows you to maintain a lot of strength while stripping away body fat. But you will, once you get to a certain threshold, I mean, once you get so lean, it's almost inevitable that some strength loss is going to come along with it. For me, usually when I get up to about 6 weeks out from a bodybuilding show, like I'm able to have really good, strong workouts up to about 6 weeks out. And then for whatever reason, once I get to that, past that point, and I'm starting to dip down, you know, get extra lean at that stage, you know, like contest ready, it's just like my strength just drops off big time. And I've talked to a lot of bodybuilders and a lot of people who've, you know, went through this process, and it's very similar across the board. Once you get so lean, it's just you can't maintain that strength. Now, in Peter's case, he might not want to get super lean. I mean, you can still be reasonably lean and have a darn good beach body and maintain your strength at the same time. So I guess it's all depending on how ripped do you want, like how low do you want to go when it comes to the body fat. You know.
Right. I mean, if he wants, I don't know where he's at now, but I mean, he could probably keep a ton of strength and get down to like 12% or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
I mean, if he wants to just up your cardio, you know, you want to just try to lose a lot of body fat, but not get to where you're trying to compete or get into single digits or anything like that. I think getting onto like a 5x5 program is good maintenance mode. But then at the same time, what you really need to do is clean up your diet and start adding in more cardio than when you're really trying to up your one rep max. So that's something you could try. Get onto like a 5x5 program for a few weeks. Really tighten up on your diet, but that doesn't mean eat less. I'm talking about just cleaning it up. Like make sure you're still getting enough protein. I say get a gram at least per pound.
Absolutely.
Per pound of body weight for minimum, and that's just going to keep you from breaking down and keep your muscles growing and recovering. And then make sure you're getting your gallon of water a day.
Yep.
Get your vegetables. If you can just cut out three main things, like the three white evils or whatever, like sugar, salt, and white flour, just get those three things out of your diet completely. Start drinking a lot of water. Get your protein and your vegetables. And then Lee might have some more suggestions on carbs. There's a lot of controversy on that. I try to stick to the lower glycemic carbs. I don't avoid them completely. But if you eat a lot of protein and a lot of vegetables, drink a lot of water, and up your cardio, I think you should be able to maintain a lot of the strength you gained.
And another little trick you can do to help maintain your strength and your muscle mass is to eat low carb for the majority of your meals. But for your post-workout meal, you could have a high-carb meal there. So, I mean, that would be a meal where you could have, you know, generous servings of potatoes, rice, or pasta, or oatmeal, or something like that. Again, good, solid, starchy, complex carbs, but save it for your post-workout meal to help, you know, rebuild and recover your muscle tissue, replenish your glycogen levels and things like that. But at the same time, those carbs aren't going to be shuttled towards body fat because you're consuming them post-workout. So that's a little trick that I often do in my training when I want to get leaner. Save your carb meal for your post-workout, and that helps to keep your strength up as well.
Yeah, good point, definitely.
Yeah.
Hey, we're getting close to the end now. You want to get one more, maybe the calf question?
Let's see what we got here. I know we've got a lot of questions. Yeah, right. We've got a lot of questions come through, and unfortunately, we're not going to have time to cover them all. But we try to cover a lot of main ones that we know that probably apply to a lot of people. And this next one, and I'm just going to throw this out there because Mike spurred me on. The question is, Haley, my question is, do you need to have great genetics to have great calves? Or if you don't have good genetics for calves, can you train them so they will be great, almost to the size of yours, LOL? And this is from David. And I have to be upfront and honest. I've got big old calves. You can call them cows if you want. And I got those from my mom. My mom has huge calves, and it's not really due to training them. I mean, I've always had big calves. It's just a genetic thing. And it's one of those muscle groups, for the most part, you either have them or you don't. Yes, you can train them, and yes, you can make improvements, but when it comes to having really huge calves, usually it's a genetic thing. And, you know, that's the harsh truth of it all. Like a lot of even pro bodybuilders struggle in the calf department. You know, they might have huge arms and shoulders and chest, back, and quads, and then it's just like chicken legs from the knee down. And, I mean, obviously someone who's, you know, at the elite levels of bodybuilding has tried everything that you can imagine to get their muscle.
Including calf implants.
you know, you name it, right, from the site injection oils, a synthenol crap or whatever that some people use to implants to whatever. So, I mean, if pro bodybuilders sometimes struggle with calf development, then, you know, it's a genetic thing. But
you remember the quote by Arnold?
Oh, what was the score?
I don't know if I'm getting it right, but I think he used to be embarrassed of his calves, so they like cut all his jeans off at the knees, so he had to walk around showing his calves
right
everywhere he went, so he'd be embarrassed of them and train them real hard. Somebody said, I might be getting it wrong, but I think he said, like, your calves don't even like show any growth until you put in like 1,000 hours of calf training or something like that. It was something ridiculous.
Okay, I've heard some crazy stuff from Arnold. I remember he was actually one time he was talking about that at the Arnold Classic a few years back, and he said that he trained his calves every single day, you know, first thing in his workouts to try and get them to grow. I mean, yeah, improvement is always possible with any body part, but still, I think genetics are going to have a huge impact on, you know, your size potential for any muscle groups. I mean, some people have huge arms, some people have huge shoulders, some people have huge calves, whatever. I mean, we just have these genetic muscle groups that are just naturally bigger. But still, I mean, if you want to put in the work and the effort, you can certainly make improvements. But again, the size does come down to the genetics. All right, is there anything else you want to cover here, Mike, now before we clue it up for the evening?
I think we got most of them. Most of the ones we can get in without being too long.
Yeah, I know. There's some questions here. I'm just quickly skimming through them. Some are kind of repetitive, some like nutrition-related questions and stuff. Okay, there's one quick question I'm going to throw in here, and this one's from John, and it's with regards to the Blast Your Bench program. And he's saying, I got a question. I'm in week 3 of the Blast Your Bench program. I just finished the workout, which is 5 sets of 3 reps, and I went up from 5 pounds from yesterday, and I could only do 3 sets of 3 reps. The fourth set, I could only do 2, and I didn't do the 5th set. Okay, One thing that it mentions here in the program, I do recommend that when you can get all the sets and the reps for a given workout, and you can do all those sets and reps with good form by yourself with no help from a spotter, up the weight by 5 pounds for your next workout. You know, use those little 2.5 pound plates and get the 5 pound jumps on the bar. If you can't get all those sets and reps by yourself, or you need to get, you know, help from a spotter, then keep the same weight for your next workout. Obviously, don't increase the weight if you can't complete all the sets and reps by yourself. And this is a question that I've been asked by several people who have followed the program, because it is a very demanding program. I mean, the Blast Your Bench 3-week bench press specialization phase, I mean, you are kicking your ass in the bench, but it's like controlled overtraining. We're going to blast it hard for 3 weeks and really get a big growth spurt, but you're going to push it to the limit. I mean, yeah, you're going to make some great gains, but after those 3 weeks, you need to back off and, I mean, give your body a break from it. So definitely listen to your body, and if you can't get all the sets and reps by yourself, keep the same weight for your next workout, or maybe even consider dropping the weight, because a lot of people tend to overshoot and try to do too much too soon. And I like to be a little conservative with my weight jumps so that you can get all your sets and reps, you know, lift the weight and feeling strong and have, you know, high confidence going into your next workout, rather than, you know, hitting failure, feeling burnt out and feel like the weights are too heavy. And I just find that that mentally kind of screws you up for the next workout. I find it's better to play it a little bit more on the conservative side and ride that wave of momentum to make the most of it. You kind of mentioned that earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I get that question all the time from people, and we talk about people just having an off week or backing off if you're not feeling that great. But I give you a rep range to do per set. Mm-hmm. And if you have struggled, let's say you're in week two and you struggled and you didn't quite get as many reps as you wanted to on each of your sets, what I recommend you do for the following week is on your first few sets, go for the minimum rep range. Let's say in the first set you could do 6 reps. Don't. Do the lower end of that rep range instead. Just do the 5. Then for the next set, go for the low rep range again. Now when you get to your last set, which is your heaviest set of the day, now you've got more energy because you shot for the lower end rep ranges in the previous set. Does that make sense? So otherwise, if you're going for the high end of every set all the way up, and then you get to your last set and you miss it and it hurts your confidence, if that happened to you in 1 week, the next week, go for all the low rep ranges and then save your energy for the last set, and you'll probably be more likely to get it.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense, and I've often done similar things when doing multiple sets of the same rep range. Like, for example, let's say you're doing 5 sets of 5 or, you know, 4 sets of 8 or whatever rep range you pick, but you're keeping the same weight for each set and kind of the same rep range. If I can get through, you know, the first, like, okay, let's say we're doing 5 sets of 5. If I can get through the first 4 sets of 5 and feel real strong, sometimes I may, you know, push it a little more, put on a little bit more weight for that last set if I'm feeling super strong for the first four. And again, you finish the workout feeling strong, feeling confident, and actually looking forward to your next workout, rather than doing it the other way around where you get to that last set, you know, feeling beat up. And actually, you know, it's a big, you know, confidence breaker as well. Once you, if you got to fail, you know, and get the spotter to pull that bar off you or something like that. I mean, it's not a way you want to end your workout.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I got one more real quick one just before we end things. I just wanted to get this one in. I just saw it. Different people have different schedules, and it's easy for us to say do this on this day, but you got to make this work for your lifestyle and your other commitments and family and whatever activities you have going on. So this is from Richard, and he just wanted to move his rest days around. He's got judo class, so he wanted to move his rest days to Tuesday and Thursdays. Can he do that? I'm going to say, yeah, you can move things around, make it work for you, but here's what I don't want you to do. This is split up like a bodybuilding split, some of these workouts. For your chest day, I don't want you to do shoulders or triceps the day before your bench workout. So don't move things around like that. That's a pretty important key to my program. If you are changing the days around or moving your rest days, you just can't stick to the way it is due to your schedule, try not to do shoulders or triceps the day before you bench press.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. that's a good point. And I mean, I get that question a lot too, because obviously people have different schedules. So yeah, things can be manipulated, but you still have to stick to the foundational principles of the program. So yeah, thanks for covering that one.
Yeah, man.
All right, Mike. Like I say, we're gone over our hour. I know that, but that's okay. I don't mind over delivering, providing a bit of extra. But again, I think we'll clue it up unless there's another quick one that you want to throw in there last minute.
No, I think we're good. We snuck in like four more since we said that.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, all thanks right, for being on that call. Fun talking about all this stuff, and appreciate everybody listening to us and sharing all your comments, feedback, success stories. It keeps us motivated to keep doing this, hearing about everybody's journey and things you're learning, and sharing your information with us as well.
For sure. I mean, I think that's the highlight of my day when I can go like check my email or something and somebody sends me a success story saying, hey, I followed the program, and then share the results. There's nothing I enjoy more than getting those emails. So by all means, guys, you're listening to this call. If you have a success story or you want to be a future success story, by all means, let us know. Shoot us an email. Let us know about your progress with the programs. Both Critical Bench, Blaster Bench, doesn't matter. I mean, send it in. We'd love to hear about your success because, again, that's what keeps us motivated on our end, hearing about the results that you guys are getting.
Yeah, and if you want to learn more, who knows how you got this interview, maybe it gets passed along later on, but go check out blastyourbench.com and criticalbench.com. And also check out Lee's personal blog over at leehayward.com.
Yep, and your blog, is it criticalbench.com? That's your main blog site as well?
Well, that's the main magazine area of the site where there's tons of articles, exercises, lots of all the free information. And then my little personal area of the site where I blog and just do rants and just kind of talk about whatever I want. And that's criticalbench.com/strength, and that takes you to my blog.
Okay, cool. So definitely check all those out. And like I say, I will have the replay of this call posted up and sent out. So, again, there's a lot of stuff we covered here, and I definitely recommend, save this to your MP3 player. Go over it again, because the more you listen to this, the more it's going to sink in and the better results you're going to get. All right, Mike, thanks for sharing all your words of wisdom. I mean, I picked up a ton of stuff myself, so I'm sure that our listeners got a lot of benefit from this as well.
Yeah, thanks, Lee. Likewise, I learned a lot, too.
All right. Cool. Awesome. All right, folks, that concludes our Mass and Strength coaching call. Like I say, we'll probably be doing some more stuff like this in the near future, but you'll be hearing about that. And in the meantime, when you complete our programs, either Critical Bench or Blaster Bench, again, please send us in your feedback. We'd love to hear about it. All right, guys, take care. Over and out.